Welcome to another Ethical Corporation podcast with me, Toby Webb. Joining me in the podcast today in our local bar, the Gramophone, is Sam Chambers, who's author of a new book published on the oil trade, China, and the fragility of the supply chains called Oil on Water. So welcome to the podcast, Sam. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Joined by quite a few Russians in the background here, which is all good for our oil discussion.
Absolutely, keeps the global perspective. Now, Sam, your new book, which you co-authored with our China editor, Paul French, is called Oil on Water. You're looking at the oil supply chain. What are the main findings in the book that you've discovered?
First and foremost, because Paul is based in Shanghai and I'm up in the northeast of China, the predominant theme of the book is China's growing thirst for oil. And as a result of that, the kind of the fragility of the supply chain as it gets stretched, with more and more oil being needed around East Asia and also South Asia, and how that oil is being moved and the problems being encountered, whether it is with the environment, whether it's piracy, or indeed the sort of the speed with which infrastructure has been put up to accommodate all this new raw material flowing into the likes of China, and then the subsequent problems that have happened as a result of the speed with which these facilities have been put up. Say the Dalian oil spill recently is a good example.
So we'll come back to the environment bit later on, and also the piracy angle, which I think is very interesting and important. But first of all, just give us an overview of why you think the supply chain is fragile, because there's a lot of fear in the West about, you know, the old 19th century hark back to the yellow peril and China's rise. But I think what we've always argued is that China's a lot more fragile than anyone realises. What with the social unrest growing and no one really understanding what's going on, with the, you know, the media censored and so on. So how fragile is the supply chain into China, and why should that be a concern for big companies, for example?
China didn't need to import oil until the 1990s, and as of last year it became a net oil importer. 50% of the oil it consumes as of last year are imports. Imports are increasingly vital to keep the economy moving. China's oil supply domestically is just not enough for this roaring economy growing 10% a year. 40% of the growth in oil consumption from 2004 to 2009, it comes from China. So as of December last year, China has surpassed Saudi America in terms of Saudi Arabian oil purchases. I mean, that's quite an incredible turnaround. One always thinks of Saudi Arabia and America being hand in hand, as in the Bush days. But actually, China now is a larger purchaser of oil. So this is a very, very swift turnaround, just in the last decade, how quickly China has come to the top of the pile. And I mean, it's only 2 months ago that the International Energy Agency said that China was now the world's largest consumer of energy. And yet, this is only the beginning of the growth of Chinese energy demand. China uses per capita 5 times less energy than the United States. It has 20 times less cars per person than the United States. And yet, last year, China became the world's largest car market. In August alone last year, Beijingers, just Beijingers, bought more new cars than the whole of the United States put together. So what you're seeing is this huge, great growth in demand from China that we've never seen before. And that is putting pressure on the oil supply chain.
And where is that pressure finding itself? Are we seeing it in South American, Saudi Arabian exports? Where's their oil coming from, and what's the sort of vulnerability that they're suffering from?
They have been very good at mixing their geographical reach for where they're getting their oil compared to their East Asian neighbours. If you look at Korea and Japan and Taiwan, around 80% of what the oil that they source comes from the Middle East. For China, it's actually now around 40%. The rest is from a mixture, Africa, where there are now 800,000 Chinese living in Africa. There were 15 times less that number 10 years ago. Venezuela, Russia, Central Asia via pipelines, very important part. So they're very good at getting a far greater global spread of their oil imports. But in terms of choke points, the difficult parts that potentially worry China as to where their oil is coming from, in the Persian Gulf you have the Straits of Hormuz, where a quarter of all oil moves every single day. At its narrowest point, it's 54 kilometers wide, and there are a number of Somali pirates not a million miles away from there that cause concern. And then the second area that worries the Chinese is the Malacca Straits down in Southeast Asia, which borders Singapore, Malaysia and Indonesia, where a quarter of all oil moved by ship passes through every day, and 60% of all China's oil needs pass through there. That, at its narrowest point, is just 2.4 kilometers wide. Were there to be a collision there, China could find itself in a bit of strife if there was a couple of ships in a channel smashed together, because China doesn't have significant reserves. It's trying to change that at the moment, but it only has around 2 weeks' worth of reserves. The International Energy Agency says that a decent country should have 90 days' reserves. China has set about building an incredible array of strategic reserve tanks, and most of them are now built. They just need to be filled. So China is trying to influence its key energy arteries by building into the Indian Ocean, by extending its influence into the Malacca Straits, and so that it is more and more in charge of its energy supply chain. Because ultimately, if it doesn't have oil, it doesn't have economic growth. If it doesn't have economic growth, it's got people unemployed, and that's, for a one-party state, rather important.
And what are the risks to the Chinese oil supply from piracy? I mean, before we turn the tape on, we were mentioning that there's been at least a couple of episodes of super tankers being hijacked by pirates. And you were mentioning that just recently an insurance firm is taking on its own security force. And this sounds potentially quite risky and difficult for some of the companies shipping oil through the Straits of Hormuz.
Sure. It's very difficult, and I think the interesting thing with the whole piracy thing out of Somalia is this is the first time that we've ever seen a multilateral naval force essentially in peacetime come together. It's also the first time that we've seen the Chinese ever go into a blue water naval engagement, going as far overseas as they have done as this. Traditionally, China has kept itself to itself. Same with the Koreans, same with the Japanese. But they're all out there, along with the Russians. You know, we've never had such a multinational naval force ever before. And yes, I mean, just today, there is a report in The Independent saying that one insurer of ships, Jardine Lloyd, Thompson I think the name is, who insures 14% of the world's fleet, is so hacked off with losing ships to these Somali pirates that they will create their own private navy with 20 patrol boats to try and counter this problem. So China is sending its naval ships over there and is putting Hong Kong registered and Chinese registered ships in a convoy to transit the piracy prone areas. But it has suffered a couple of ships being taken and presumably has ultimately had to pay a ransom.
That seems to be what a lot of firms and some of the bigger players are doing these days. But moving on to the environmental aspect of Chinese oil. Obviously, you, based in Dalian, you're an eyewitness to a very large explosion at an oil terminal recently there. Talk us through that and about how that coinciding with China's emergence as the largest energy consumer in the world has or is affecting the way Chinese think about the environment and oil. I mean, is this really taking hold there, or is it really just much more about the growth still?
It's still very much about the growth. Dalian is one of the key petrochemical centres in China, and it is it's been building up its oil reserves there for a long time. Where this explosion took place, since 2006, the local environmental authorities have been warning the local government. They're saying, if anything untoward happens at this particular terminal, you guys do not have the facilities to deal with it. And sure enough, they were correct. It was the worst ever oil spill in China's history. And it could have been a lot worse. I mean, the stench from this oil explosion was throughout the city, and it's a very, very big city. It's, I mean, many people would never have heard of it, but it is 6.5 million people, but it stretches geographically. It's very wide. Throughout the entire city, you could smell that oil for 3, 4, 5 days as it just blazed away. And two vice premiers from Beijing flew in that night, showing the severity of it. They did clear it up pretty fast, but in a fairly questionable way. They said to locals, we'll give you the equivalent of $33 for every barrel that you get from the sea. So there was a bit of a local gold rush and lots of disgusting looking people coming out of the sea, all black. But they cleared it up. That's the power of cheap human labour.
So the environmental agenda not quite taking hold in Dalian as one would like, I suppose.
No. I think at the moment the need for energy and the requisite infrastructure surpasses the thoughts about the environment. They're just, that is very secondary. Very, very secondary. The growth is so phenomenal in the economy, and the economy is so desperate for raw materials that infrastructure is built at breakneck speed without necessarily thinking about the environment.
Well, thanks, Sam. Now, listeners, if you want more information on Sam's book, probably best thing to do is just go onto Amazon, search for Oil on Water. The book's by Sam Chambers and Paul French. I've got a copy. In fact, there's a quote from me on the back cover. So, to declare a vested interest here, I do think it's a great read and very interesting for anyone interested in globalisation and energy supply. So, thanks for joining us today, Sam. And listeners, please do check back to the website soon for more podcasts.